Welcome into another edition of the NBC Sports Pro Basketball Talk podcast. Brett Polikoff here with managing editor of Pro Basketball Talk, Kurt Heelan. What is going on, Kurt? Bright and early from Oakland.
Yeah, I'm doing well. It's early out here in Oakland for those of us who are up late, but it's good to talk to you guys, man.
And also with us is Dominic Ridgard from NBC Sports. What is going on, Dom?
Hey, Brett. How you doing, man?
Good. So, exciting game one of the NBA Finals. LeBron James went nuts, 44 points, albeit on 38 shots. Wasn't enough. Missed the chance to win the game at the end of regulation. Overtime session with all Golden State Warriors, and the Warriors come away with the game one victory in the NBA Finals, 108-100. And, Kurt, you were in the building, so we'll start with you. What did you see out of LeBron James, and is that pretty much what we expected the Warriors to allow him to do?
I think they, you know, is despite the fact that he put up 44 points, we had a great piece from Dan Feldman on this morning. He wasn't getting his shots at the rim. He was having to knock down jumpers. Andre Iguodala, in particular, did a really good job on him defensively. Just bodying him up, not letting him get inside, not letting him have the easy ones, make him hit the fadeaways and stuff. And, hey, as Steve Kerr said after the game, he's LeBron James, man. You give him stuff, and sometimes he'll just knock it down, and there's nothing you can do about it. I think that they are okay with that. I think despite how many points he put up, the fact that he really wasn't dishing, they weren't getting easy buckets, Warriors will live with that. I mean, you can't take away everything, and I think that they took away enough, obviously, to get the win.
Well, looking at LeBron's shot chart from last night, he only got four attempts in the restricted area. So the Warriors did a good job of keeping him away from the rim. And look, outside the paint, LeBron shot just 7 of 22, just 2 of 8 from three-point distance. Dom, is that something that the Warriors are going to live with in this series? Is it pretty much they'd rather see LeBron taking 38 shots and not have the rest of his teammates be as much of a threat?
I mean, it's tough to call because hindsight's 2020. When you get a win, like I've said before, you never really apologize for it. You just kind of take it and move on and make the necessary adjustments. But, you know, the overtime was ugly, but like you said, it came down to a final possession where he had a shot to win it, and so did Shumpert. Last night after the game, a lot of the players and Steve Kerr all said they thought that Shumpert's putback was good.
Yeah.
So, you know, we could easily be having a different discussion. You know, it's funny because we brought up like the possibility of a 40-point game, and all of us were not sure if it was going to happen, but I think we all agreed that if it is, it's going to be because LeBron is doing so much isolation and he's been taking a lot of shots, kind of putting efficiency to the wayside and realizing that he has to carry the team offensively, especially because they're without playmakers. The only other one is Kyrie Irving, and obviously we'll get into his injury. So, you know, hindsight lends you to say that, yeah, the Warriors kind of executed the game plan of letting him get off, not letting him be the all-around facilitator that's really devastating when he's in the high 30s, but also like 14, 15 assists. But for a long time, I would say probably up and through the first three quarters, and I've got the official scores report right here. Through the first three quarters, he was 12 of 25, so he floated around 50%. And then the fourth quarter in overtime is when I think he really started to kind of force shots. He stopped kind of going to the post and taking the easy shots, maybe not in the restricted area, but definitely in the paint, definitely some easy turnaround hook shots. So it's easy to say that, you know, they executed the game plan that they wanted, but they almost lost. You know, that could have been the game plan executed the way they wanted and still came out with an L.
By the way, you have some good points, but I mean, one of the things Blatt said after the game was that he thought fatigue factored in here. LeBron was carrying a heavy load, not just he, but the entire Cavaliers team. Just, I think they finished like 1 of 13 on their last 14 shots. They all kind of just, I don't think it was so much went cold. I think that their legs got to them a little bit, and LeBron in particular wasn't getting inside anymore. And by the way, the other factor here is this was, you know, This was the J.R. Smith that New York Knicks fans remember. I mean, he was, what, 3 of 13? He wasn't knocking down anything.
you know, anytime Rihanna is sitting courtside and J.R. Smith is playing, he's going to be a little bit distracted. That's just how it's going to go.
Yeah.
I will just say, by the way, one of the highlights of the much discussed bits in the media area was that everyone got to see Rihanna actually, because there was no other option, choose to use a porta potty.
Oh, wow. Exciting. Very exciting.
Yeah, shoot.
Be on Sports
Center. That's the type of inside information you only get right here on the NBC Sports Pro Basketball Talk podcast. All right, well, what about that last play of regulation? You know, the Cavaliers had a full 24 seconds, and the best they could do, you know, they got LeBron free on a little bit of a pin down. He pops out and takes a step back, you know, contested fadeaway, you know, long jump shot. Now, we've seen him make those in the past, and I know that sort of the isolation, dribbling down the clock, you know, hero ball is kind of what we're used to in the NBA at the end of games. It's just what tends to happen. But man, it's got to drive you nuts, right? If you're a Cavaliers fan, like, you can't get a better shot than what LeBron got with all that time on the clock. You can't run a set. You can't run cutters. You can't set screens. Like, you have all basically a full possession, and the best you come away with is that shot. You know, Dom, I'll throw it to you. I mean, are you kind of tired of seeing this hero ball at the end of games, or is this basically just what the NBA is at this point?
For sure. You know, I was definitely disappointed. I wasn't necessarily shocked because of all the isolation we were seeing. And I think the commentators brought it up. That could have been the most isolation we've seen out of any game in the whole postseason. It was amazing. If it wasn't, it was LeBron on the left block, I would say, just visually, like, if you had to put a number on it, on more than half of the Cavaliers' possessions easily. So it wasn't shocking that it ended with a LeBron isolation. I guess the thing that immediately struck me was, okay, because I saw a lot of things flying around on Twitter about, you know, this is David Blatt not showing his chops, or this is the Cavs failing to drop a good play. But then immediately I'm thinking, well, the entire offense has gone through LeBron, and clearly he's quick to say when he scratches a play and he hits a game winner. Was that the play they drew up? Was that a play where LeBron again just said, give me the ball, set a screen for me, I'm going to take the shot? Like, that's things that no one will know. Oh, the only people that know, I guess, are the Cavs in that huddle. But I was definitely disappointed in the shot. I'm definitely kind of sick of the whole hero ball, dribble it down, and then kind of heave one up and hope for the best. I think they definitely could have got a better shot. But, you know, whose call was it to take that shot?
Yeah, I have to say, if David Blatt had actually designed a play, wouldn't LeBron have said, no, just give me the ball and everybody clear out? I want 1-4 flat. I mean, he knew. And I'm generally, with Brett here, I am not a fan of late-game hero ball. But if you're going to do it, there's about 3 or 4 guys in the league I'd want to do it with, and LeBron's on that list, man, and especially sure. The game he'd had. So, you know, it's not ideal, but you've got LeBron isolated. And like we said, you know, not to go Jeff Van Gundy here, but it's a make-or-miss league, and that was a shot we have seen him knock down in this game and in other games, and it's something he can make and he can do.
I guess from my perspective, there was just so much time left. Like, if that's the route you're going to go, why not give him the ball far earlier in the shot clock? Send that screen, free him up. You know, they did it with like 4 or 5 seconds left, and then, you know, he's forced into that. I mean, why not send the screen earlier, get him the ball at the top of the key with, you know, top of the three-point arc with 10, 12 seconds left, and then at least he has some time to create. He has some options. You know, if he puts the ball on the floor, maybe they send a double at him and somebody else is open. And then, of course, you know, the media could kill LeBron for passing up, you know, a potential game-winning shot. But, you know, at least he could have some more options. I just felt like with all that time on the clock, that was just a terrible decision by the Cavaliers offense.
Yeah, and Brett, to that point, and I agree with you, and I think that, and I think we've seen this in other sports as well. Sometimes when the game is winding down and you have the last possession or the ball's in your hands with time winding down, too many times teams prioritize getting the last shot or making sure there's not enough time left. They prioritize that over getting a quality shot or actually, like, getting the job done. You know what I mean? So the thinking is, okay, we've got the ball. I'm pretty sure the shot clock and game clock were very similar. I think it might have been a second or two off. But the mindset of, okay, we need to make sure we get the last shot needs to take a back seat. So we need to make sure we get a good shot, whether that means running a set earlier or driving to the basket earlier. I think that is something that has to change, because when your mindset is, okay, we need to take the last shot, it's going to end up in a ball stopping situation, because you need one person to make the decision when to go.
Well, and also, you have LeBron James, who's, you know, basically impossible to stop on a dribble drive, right? So if he has the ball out top, 10 or so seconds left, waits to go till there's 5 or 6, if he just goes hard to the basket, and again, you know, fatigue certainly could have played a factor. I mean, LeBron played almost 46 minutes total in that game. Obviously, you know, the overtime session added to that. But, I mean, if he just dribbled hard to the basket, he's either going to score or he's going to put the onus on the officials to make a call, because he's going to have to get fouled. I mean, that's pretty much the way it's going to go. So to me, just seeing him launch that step back fadeaway, just, you know, very disappointing, because when you have the best player in the game and he's that, you know, much of a physical presence, I just feel like there's so many better ways, you know, to use that level of talent.
By the way, just to throw some credit the other direction, and I don't know if you saw this, we posted it, but the synergy numbers came out last night, and LeBron James had 13 shots when guarded by Andre Iguodala. He had 7 points on those 13. Iguodala did, I think, the best job just physically staying in front of LeBron and making him shoot those kind of jumpers, not letting him get anything out. But I'm with you. I know that the other thing a lot of teams like to do here is, well, don't bring another defender in there because they'll just trap or whatever. I don't mind LeBron coming off a pick if you've got somebody you trust doing it. And I obviously Kyrie wasn't out there, but, you know, have Tristan Thompson or somebody set that pick and roll and make them defend a few things. I, like you said, when it's 1-4 flat and you can just bring the help a little bit if he really does get by, it, you know, I'd rather have some options.
All right, well, Kurt, you wrote about this a little bit, but, you know, a lot of things went right for the Cavaliers in this game, you know, despite the way it ultimately ended. You know, they basically contained Stephen Curry, you know, 26 points on, you know, 10 of 20 shooting. I mean, that's a good game. That's a solid game. It's an all-star game, but it's not ridiculous. It's not him running around, you know, jacking a bunch of crazy threes. I think he only hit 2 of his, like, patented silly shots last night. I think the rest of them were all pretty much, you know, under control, and Cleveland did a good job of not letting him get loose. Klay Thompson just 5 of 14. You know, Draymond Green didn't do anything offensively, 4 of 13. Big game from Iguodala off the bench. But, you know, Kurt, was this really the Cavaliers' best chance to steal one in Oakland?
I think it was. You could see how tired, you know, we talked about fatigue, but they were tired. They put a lot of energy in both at both ends of the floor in this one. They were very committed. And like you said, the Warriors admitted after the game, they were a little bit tight, they were a little bit cold when they came up, but they were just, you know, there was rust. And the first quarter was rusty on both sides, and both teams looked like they'd had like 8 days off or something. But
did that happen?
Exactly. Remember, we actually had like, I think, 14 podcasts between the last final game. But, you know, Klay Thompson and some of the other guys admitted, look, hey, the moment, you know, we were just trying to do a little too much, and we were a little just taken back by the moment, and we were thinking about it. It took a while for the game to settle in. It let them get that lead. But if you remember, they got up by 14 points, and you're like, this is interesting. This is going to be interesting. And then it was vintage Warriors, and they didn't sustain it, but it was they were down by 14 points, and then it was tied 36-36. Like, it seemed like 2 minutes later. They make these kind of runs where it happens so quickly. And once that happened, I'm like, uh-oh, they've let him back in. We'll see. They hung there, but I think, like I said, I think fatigue did matter. I think they physically wore down the Cavaliers just a little bit. They can't, you know, look, again, that's one of the things that the Warriors do really well. They have depth, and they keep throwing different looks at you. And also, in the overtime, some credit to Steve Kerr here. Cavs left Mozgov on the floor, and Kerr went, you tipped it off with Festus Ezeli, left him in for a minute or so. They wanted to take him out the first dead ball. It took more than a minute for that to happen. And then he went with that small ball lineup, bigger, big in the game or not, and it worked. They couldn't defend it. It worked brilliantly.
Well, why did he wait till overtime to go with that small ball lineup with Draymond, you know, playing the role of the big man?
Was that the first? I was trying to go back, and I hadn't had a chance yet to go back through the numbers. Was that the first time they had used it? They usually break it out earlier in the game. And I thought we'd see it a little bit up against the Tristan Thompson at the five lineup, but I'm not sure that. I mean, it certainly didn't have that kind of success before. And then at that, you know, that's, as Nate Duncan is prone to say, that's, you know, Steve Kerr's break the glass in case of emergency lineup, and it certainly worked in this one.
I'm pretty sure that was the first time they used it. I'm not 100% positive, but I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I think they waited till overtime to roll that one out. So Dom, I'll throw it to you. Do you think the Cavaliers kind of expended too much energy in this game, didn't get the win, and now they're, you know, they're in trouble, and they're sort of going to be hard pressed to end up getting one in Oakland?
Definitely. I think even before Kyrie's injury, I was thinking, you know, this was clearly their best chance of taking one in Oakland, because of the fact that Golden State got off to such a sloppy start. They were clearly a little nervous, like Kurt said, and they got that big lead. And I can't remember who it was, but somebody on Twitter did mention that, you know, the trust and the depth will eventually come to a head in the Warriors' favor, and it absolutely did. We're talking about the difference of playing, you know, Matthew Dellavedova played 9 minutes, but mostly it was just spot duty. Mostly they played seven guys, whereas Golden State played 10 guys, including he was able to get one of his bench guys 32 minutes in Andre Iguodala. So I definitely think the depth wore on the Cavaliers, and it eventually tired them out. I'm looking at the game log right now. LeBron played 46. Tristan Thompson actually led the team in minutes, led the game in minutes with 47. Irving played 44 in the next highest. I think JR and Iman both played 34. So, you know, it's one of those things where I know I said it before, where I think that the further you go into the playoffs, the shorter your rotations become. But, you know, I'm rethinking that theory with these Warriors. Clearly, Steve Kerr trusted Mo Spates in a big spot when they were down. I think he trusted him early in the second quarter when they were down 10 after that first quarter, and he provided a lift, giving them instant offense, just, you know, coming in and able to put the ball in the hole. So I think that was definitely their best chance to win a game, and I think the fatigue wore them down, especially LeBron, considering how many shots he took.
Yeah, a lot of that second quarter comeback came with Curry and Thompson on the bench. They kind of came in for the end of it, but those guys were out, and it was you mentioned the guy I was going to bring up. Mo Spates was having been out injured for a while, he came in and really gave them a lift, a serious lift in terms of just knocking down shots, being physical inside, making plays. He was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Well, I vote that we nicknamed Mo Spates Mo Shots, because he got eight field goal attempts up in 8.5 minutes.
It's just insane.
Yeah, the guy was definitely not afraid.
He's going to be the third Splash Brother now.
Steph Curry called him the biggest two guard in the league, which is 100% accurate.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right, well, let's dive into Kyrie Irving here a little bit. So, obviously, Kyrie Irving, he played great. I mean, he looked basically like his old self, you know, 23 points. Heavy minute workload, though, over 43 minutes. Went down with that knee injury in the overtime session. Said afterward, you know, I mean, Kurt, we'll let you get into, you know, what you saw there in the locker room and all that stuff. But, you know, basically, he said, you know, there was worry in the tone of his voice. He said it felt different than the previous ones. They ruled out ACL and MCL tears, but he's set for an MRI. You know, left the building on crutches. Doesn't look good for his prospects. Kurt, what did you see and hear, you know, after the game regarding Kyrie Irving and his knee injury?
Yeah, I will say this: they really don't know. They, like you said, they don't believe it's ACL or MCL. But as Kyrie put it, there's a lot of other things in the knee that can go wrong. There's a genuine concern, though. Just watching, and you know, Kyrie spoke a little bit to the media, but watching the reaction of his father was there, their agents, everybody from the Cavaliers was obviously worried about this and hanging out outside their locker room, and it was hard to get a read because there was definitely concern, but there wasn't pure foreboding. There wasn't that kind of gloom over them. The guys were still kind of joking around and laughing. The real impression everybody came away with was that they just don't know. There seems to be something there. It could be worse than, you know, it could be bad news. It could be very bad news. Hopefully it's not. But you couldn't really tell. I think their problem is here, if it comes back clean, if it comes back with the best possible of reports, he's still not going to be the same. I mean, that thing, he was limping. He had, look, obviously everybody knows he left on crutches. I will say this. If you watched, you know, the video of him walking off the court, he limped worse in the locker room 10 minutes later, or, you know, 15 minutes later when the media came in. It seemed, now that part of that could just be tightening up again. It's hard to read. And I'm not going to play Twitter doctor here and try to figure it out, but he was limping worse. There was, ice all over his knees. He's concerned. You know, like you said, he had that question. He's like, there's worry in his voice. That said, they just don't know. They're not sure. This is bad because he's not going to, like I said, even if it's clean, he may miss the next game. Even if he plays, he's not going to move the same way. And if he's not, we discussed this guy's last podcast and going into this, if he's not moving the same, it becomes a real defensive, you can't play him much defensively. They'll just expose him.
Well, we saw in stories that came out from both Ken Berger at CBS Sports and Brian Windhorst of ESPN that Kyrie's agents, Kyrie's father, and Cavaliers general manager David Griffin were having, somewhat of a, don't want to say heated exchange, but an emotional exchange after the game, after Kyrie's injury, obviously discussing that. It's been interesting. It's been an interesting dynamic through the playoffs. I mean, Kyrie, it's a little bit has been made of like, hey, if the doctors are telling you one thing and it's fine and it's just a pain tolerance issue, then we see this in professional sports all the time. It's man up, play through the pain. Your team needs you. It's the playoffs. It's the finals. But on the flip side, when you saw him re-injure that knee after a 43-minute workload, even after 8 days off, it's worth wondering exactly what's going on. Obviously, there's some pressure on him to play and perform. You never know if you're going to get back to the finals. Just look at Oklahoma City, with Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook. We thought they'd be in the finals, every year, and they're just not. We see injuries. We see other strange things happen. So these are opportunities not to take lightly, but at the same time, I mean, Kyrie's a young guy, man. You have to preserve his health for the future. And, Dom, I'll ask you, do you think the Cavaliers have maybe been a little bit, no pun intended, too cavalier with the handling of Kyrie's injury this postseason?
It's tough to tell because I think they recognize, especially when LeBron decided to come back, the mindset has to shift into, we have to take full advantage of every opportunity that we have. And – I think that they, up until this point, they treated his injury, I thought, with kid gloves. They rested him, what was it, two games in the conference finals. Yeah. They limited him in game four. And I'm pretty sure that, if I remember correctly, he was quoted as saying he pushed a play in game four of the conference finals. I think part of that is he sees Kevin Love have to sit out and watch the run this team is on, and he doesn't want to feel like he wasn't a part of all this, of the success that they're having, even though clearly he's a huge part of it. He didn't want to be out of a closeout game to bring an Eastern Conference championship to the Cavs. He wanted to play. So that's a message to the team and to the medical staff that I can get through this. So you combine that with, like Kurt said, the 8-day layoff where he had the time to recuperate. You figure, okay, we can let Kyrie kind of go out there and be Kyrie. We could take the kid gloves off and try and get a win. I think they read the feel of the game. They saw that Golden State was a little nervous. They saw that they were in it. We talked about this before. When Golden State wins at Oracle, they tend to win really big. So when they saw that, this is going to be a tight game all the way down the stretch, I think David Blatt made the decision, I need this guy out there for the majority of the game because we can win this one. This is one that we can't let get away. And it really is unfortunate because it was one of those injuries where you saw him kind of drive and plant and his knee buckled. Is that something that could have happened in the first 5 minutes? Is that something that happened because he was tired and he didn't have the same footing? It's not one of those things like if he blew a hamstring, you could say, okay, clearly his legs were dead and his muscles were tight. It wasn't one of those things, but you had the reoccurring knee issue. So, you know, like we've said before, no one wants to play Twitter doctor, but it's hard not to when the guy's been struggling, but he's also been pushing to play. You know, the two kind of concepts butt heads.
And he was making plays, by the way. I mean, he had the game-saving blocks.
Oh, for sure.
We're not talking about overtime if he doesn't make that play on Steph Curry. And by the way, sorry to Steph Curry's wife. That was not a foul. That was a great play by Curry.
No, that was clean, for sure.
No, that was a fantastic play. I mean, you're right. It was, I mean, basically game-saving. Put the Cavaliers, you know, in position, you know, to be able to have a chance at that last shot and get it to overtime. Well, it went to overtime because LeBron missed that shot and Shumpert's follow didn't quite drop, but... yeah, incredible play by Kyrie. I don't necessarily blame David Blatt for playing Irving all those minutes. I mean, obviously he has clearance from the medical staff. It's not a Tom Thibodeau situation where, you know,
the problem is Thibodeau would have done this on a Tuesday in January against the Timberwolves.
Yeah, exactly. That's the difference. Not game one of the finals.
All right, well, let's go ahead and assume, I mean, based on what we saw, the way Kyrie was limping after the game, you know, let's go ahead and assume he's going to at least miss game two. So Kurt, I'll ask you, what are the adjustments that the Cavaliers are going to need to make? Is it going to be more of the same? Do we need LeBron to try to score 44, 50 points? Or is he going to need some help? I mean, Kyrie Irving took 22 shots. If he's not there, those shots got to go somewhere else, unless LeBron's going to hoist 60, which is, you know, highly unlikely. What adjustments do the Cavaliers make, and what can they do in game two, assuming Kyrie Irving is out?
I think they're going to, A, have to count on their defense. You're going to have to give Delvedove now a lot of minutes at the point. And then you're going to – so I think you go with finding a way to slow them down, being physical, hoping your defense that kind of got you to the finals can carry you here. You're going to have to do a – look, I mean, yeah, it's going to take a lot of LeBron. But they needed that to get here. They're still going to need somebody to step up. It was Kyrie in this game. Whether it's J.R. Smith or Dellavedova or, you know, whomever coming off the bench, whatever, somebody, Shumpert, somebody else has to get hot. Somebody else has to create shots and make things happen. They're doing it against a better defense now, and I think a defense that's going to, you know, they're going to make their adjustments. LeBron had his. They didn't let him pass much, but I think you might see the help start to come a little earlier. Over to his side, the challenge thing, especially when Bogut's on the floor. And I think you'll see different matchups, too. I mean, you didn't get to see a whole lot of Draymond Green on LeBron because he picked up those, you know, fouls. And Iguodala was doing a good job, but I think you're going to see a lot more Green and, you know, if, based on game one, I would think a lot less Harrison Barnes, but we'll see.
Well, the good news for the Cavaliers, if there is good news to be had, is that, you know, throughout the playoffs, they've gone with a bunch of different lineups. They've been able to adjust on the fly. You know, obviously, since Kevin Love went out with that injury in the first round, J.R. Smith was suspended a couple games. Kyrie missed time in the Eastern Conference Finals. So when you look at the lineup data, you know, before game one of the finals, Cleveland's second most used lineup was Matthew Dellavedova, LeBron James, Iman Shumpert, J.R. Smith, and Tristan Thompson. So they played a total of 50 minutes in eight games. Cleveland won all eight of those games, and their net rating was plus 29.2 points per 100 possessions. So it's not all gloom and doom. That's a good lineup. That's been a successful lineup, you know, for the Cavaliers. Obviously, it's going to hurt not having Kyrie out there, but they do know how to play without him. They've adjusted all playoffs long. Dom, what adjustments do you see the Cavaliers needing to make in game two in order to hang and potentially try to steal one in Oakland?
Yeah, just piggybacking off of you bringing up that lineup with Dellavedova playing the point. I was actually, you know, I agree with you. I don't blame David Blatt for playing Kyrie the amount of minutes he played. I think he realized that they had a chance to steal that game. But I am a little surprised that he only played Dellavedova 9 minutes. I think he only played like 3 minutes in the whole second half, not including overtime. You know, a lot of the talk from the conference finals and the conference semifinals was that this is a guy that helped stabilize that position when Kyrie Irving was hurt. It was kind of surprising. I don't want to kind of I don't want to leap too far saying David Blatt didn't trust him in that moment, but for some reason he only played him 9 minutes. So I definitely think that's a clear adjustment, him playing a lot more if Kyrie Irving can't go or is limited. I'm looking at the second half box score right now. Iman Shumpert, Thompson, and J.R. Smith had a combined 6 field goal attempts in the second half, which if those are your next guys who, you know, LeBron 1, Kyrie 2, if those are your kind of next 3 guys in that pecking order, they have to take more than 6 shot attempts. So I think from an adjustment side, I think LeBron's definitely going to look to be more of a facilitator early, get his teammates involved, get them a little bit more confidence, and look for them to get more open shots. I think you have to. I think he tried the route of everybody get on my back and I'm going to take us to a win, and he wore down. You know, it reminded me of a quote Phil Jackson said, and I know he said a bunch of not so smart things via Twitter lately, but I remember when I think Kobe Bryant took like 35 shots in the game, and it was clearly just Kobe jacking up shots. And in his kind of veiled attempt to defend Kobe, he said, you know, a lot of people don't realize just how hard it is to even take that many shots. And whether it's the smart idea to try and win a game or what have you, I think that's a valid point. You don't realize how hard it is to take 38 shots, how tiring it is. And I think even LeBron's going to say, for us to win, I have to dial it back a little bit and try and get my teammates involved.
Especially considering LeBron has considerable defensive responsibilities. I mean, he was, you know, especially as it got at key points in the game, I mean, he was switching on to Curry. He had time on Thompson. Part of the problem, and we've discussed this coming in, there's nowhere to really hide against the key Warriors lineups. You can't, you know, I mean, Draymond Green, you can hide him, but you've got to follow him still. If you give him open threes, he will make you pay. You know, he's going to have to work at that end of the floor, too. You can't, so I agree, he's going to need some help. And I think you'll see them move the ball more. It's just one of these games, J.R. Smith is going to go off. We have no idea when.
Yeah, and as far as the lineups and the rotations, you know, in the NBA Finals, when there's, you know, you have 8 days rest in this case, you know, leading up to the start of the series, and then you have, you know, a couple days off between Game 1 and Game 2, I think, you know, if you're David Blatt, you kind of feel justified in playing your guys the heavy minutes. And again, when you look at overtime, that's 5 additional minutes that add to these totals that make them look maybe a little bit worse, you know, than they already are. But, you know, definitely Dellavedova would be a nice boost off the bench. But either way, I mean, he's probably going to start the next game. You know, again, we're not doctors, but based on everything we saw, it'd be tough to see Kyrie Irving, you know, getting right in time for Game 2. The rest of the series we'll see. So Dellavedova is going to play a big role. And, you know, he hassles, you know, the opposing team on defense, right?
Put it lightly.
He's a guy that gets under the opponent's skin, you know, isn't afraid to mix it up, obviously. So that'll be an interesting dynamic. But when I look at Game 2 and what we might see, I think the Warriors can play a lot better. This was not peak Golden State Warriors. You know, like I said, I think I only saw Steph Curry hit like 2 of those silly shots that he's become known for, you know, that we saw all year long. The rest of them were, they contained him for the most part. Klay Thompson is going to shoot the ball better. Draymond Green's capable of scoring. I think the Warriors can definitely shoot better from 3-point distance. We're just 10 of 27. And look, they're going to continue to jack him. That's their offense. I just think the Warriors can be a lot better. You know, and again, let's give the Cavaliers defense credit for making it difficult. But you take everything into account, the nerves of playing, you know, game one of the NBA Finals, all that stuff. I just think the Warriors can play a lot better, and I'm not sure that the Cavaliers can do much better than they did last night with LeBron's 44 points.
Yeah, exactly. I think that is a really good point. There were also a number of plays, and they didn't exploit them as much, where, you know, they ran back doors, they ran guys off screens, and they got some really clean looks inside just at the rim because defenders kind of lost track of guys. And, you know, the Cavaliers will say we made mistakes and, you know, we didn't find some guys on transition threes, we didn't do this. They do that all the time, though. They've had a long MO through the playoffs in the season of kind of having mental lapses on defense, and Golden State didn't make them pay as much in this one as much as they have in others. I expect that we're going to see a much more comfortable, much better Warriors team in Game 2. Just my gut feeling is that this is going to look more like the fun time Warriors that we saw during the regular season.
Yeah, and there's certain things you look for that are anomalies, and certain things you look for that are sustainable. You know, like I don't think Andre Iguodala is going to shoot 6 of 8 from the field, 2 of 3 again. But I also think, you know, Steph currently shot 10 of 20. He's usually more efficient. Klay Thompson only shot 5 of 14. Draymond only shot 4 of 13. So I think we'll see Golden State play more towards their mean to more towards their average, which was the best team in the NBA by far. Whereas, like you mentioned, the Cavs, like Timofey Mozgov went 16-7. 16 is his highest point total for the entire playoffs, or it's tied for his highest point total for the entire playoffs. Who maybe comes back to the pack where they might have outplayed their normal standards, and who progresses more towards how they usually play and how they've been playing all season long will be very interesting to watch in Game 2.
Yeah, and you look at the shot distribution. You know, if Kyrie Irving doesn't play, that's 22 shots that have to go somewhere else. So Shumpert's gonna get some looks. You know, Tristan Thompson.
J.R. Smith would like to take all 22.
Yeah.
Throw that up there right now.
Yeah, and you know what? If he's hitting off the bench, you know, the Cavaliers will take it. They need, you know, they need somebody to sort of, you know, pick up some of that offensive slack. But you know, look, I think we'll see the Cavaliers play with a little bit of a desperation mode. You know, you don't want to go down 0-2. Of course, you know, they'll just say, well, all the Warriors did was hold serve. If that happens, and, you know, if Cavaliers will look to take care of business at home. But you don't want to go down 0-2. It's a tough hole to climb out of. Then you're asking yourself to beat, you know, the best team in the league that's been the best team in the league all season long. You know, what, 4 out of 5 at that point? That's just not going to happen. So I think we'll see the Cavaliers play with a little bit of desperation. But I think the Warriors can. There's a lot of room for improvement on the Golden State side, and I think Cleveland might be in some trouble heading into Game 2, especially if Irving doesn't play as I think we all expect.
Yeah, I mean, we should note as of this taping, we're taping this before the MRI comes out and that news. But well, like you said, whatever the news of that, just having seen him after the game, I know there's a couple days off, but and the teams are cautious these days. That, you know, the guy tweaks his ankle a little bit and he's in a walking boot after the game trying to, you know, really immobilize it and help it. And so the guys go on crutches early. They put ice on early. But just look, the tone in his voice, the mannerisms around there, they don't think it's nothing, you know. And the other thing that, you know, when we talk about, you know, hey, they won this, you know, this was their one chance. Whether or not anything happened to his knee, this was always going to be his best game. I mean, he's had 8 days off, and he's got a couple before this one, but there was no theory around that, oh, you know, he's just going to get stronger and better the more he plays. This was always something that really takes rest, and he wasn't going to get more of that. This was going to be the best we were going to see out of Kyrie all playoffs anyway, or all this series anyway.
Kurt, I know this is, again, this is just speculation, but I know you've mentioned before that, you know, the knee tendonitis thing, there could be more
yeah.
there that we're just not being told. If this MRI comes back and there's some kind of structural damage or something, not a tear, but, you know, maybe a strain, do you think that'll kind of confirm those theories that, you know, this was more than just knee tendonitis and the Cavs were kind of hoping to keep the drapes over the real injury?
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens, although the way he played before this, kind of hard to say that. He looks great. So maybe it was just tendonitis. But, you know, we'll see. I guess it depends on what it was. Was it there, you know, I'm not going to get down the speculation road of was there a little bit of this and then there was more now or something like that. You know, it would be purely speculation on my part. But it is possible. I mean, and you mentioned earlier, I think the thing that gets left out on the Kyrie it's too often is, He said, look, if I'm 30 or 40%, I want to be out there.
Yeah.
I do, you know, I can't watch. I can't be that guy. I have to be on the floor. I have to have, or at least be able to play. And I think that's him. He's the guy who's not going to, you know, he's the guy who's not going to back down.
All right, well, that's definitely a key storyline that we'll keep a close eye on as we head into Game 2. So good stuff as always, guys. We will be back after game two to break it all down, see if Kyrie was able to play, see if LeBron once again went off, and see if the Warriors can improve, as kind of we all sort of expect. So for Kirk Hillen, Dominic Ridgard, signing off this edition of the podcast. And guys, we will do it again in the next few days.